have an idea, a dream, one that you are so passionate about but have no clue on how to manifest it, then sit back, relax, and welcome to Love, Light, and Passion. Here, award-winning social media professional Wendy Manganiello and guests talk about taking that passionate idea and making it an abundant reality. This show is dedicated to the loving memory of Sean Stevenson, whose instinctive ability to motivate others taught Wendy to take a dream and allow the universe to make it into an abundant reality. Wendy is the founder of Social Abundance Marketing. They partner with you and strategically deliver your unique business content onto social media platforms, thus helping you engage and develop your business relationships. After all, making social media abundantly clear is their goal. And now your host, Wendy Manganiello.
Hello, everyone. And I have to say,
welcome. We are aware that life can change for the better or worse.
Sorry about that. I am so happy that everybody is with us this week. I'm really, really excited about this. We are back airing after what seems a very long hiatus. I took a little break over the summer, but we are back stronger than ever. And as always, thinking of my friend Sean, she's been nudging me to get back into the groove of things. So here we are. We have a great show for you planned as the Welcome Back Show. I have one of Sean's dear friends, and of course we've gotten close via our Facebook group also, is L. Denise Jackson. And she is, as always, inspiring and wonderful. And so we'll hear a little bit of history of how Denise and Sean knew each other. But I just want to give you a little bit of her background because it's pretty impressive. She has 25 years of experience in corporate America in consultant and employee roles. And coming from a family-owned business, which 25 years in corporate America for anybody is outstanding, because that's a really difficult thing for some people to stay in that profession and in that high-paced world for so long. But she went from there to retirement and didn't just retire. She kept going and being active, and she uses her business leadership acumen to guide busy professionals and entrepreneurs through practical steps to take the lead and succeed beyond where they realize. And the really great thing is, if you are in a place of stuck, we are going to work on getting you unstuck with Denise's practices, and we're going to have a conversation with her today. So welcome, Denise. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Not just appreciate it, I'm really honored, because I know Sean knew a lot of people, so I thank you that you chose me, you know, to be one of your guests.
I'm really excited, and I follow you on Facebook all the time, so I'm always reading what you write, and I like the way that your thoughts and ideas flow, so I think it's going to be a great show. But let's talk about a little history of you, because I read 25 years in corporate America, and I had not that many in nonprofit, but in management roles, and I went, oh, no, I didn't last that long. And I could not imagine not being an entrepreneur today, but saying that,
wow,
that takes a certain type of person to be able to do that, because
yeah,
corporate can be so fast-paced, it can be so ever-changing, it could be all of those things. So how did you go from that fast-paced kind of world of corporate, and very, sometimes it's very regimented, this is the world of corporate, to being an entrepreneur and being a leader within other business leaders?
So I can say that I always had the best of both worlds, and I always was a hybrid of some sort. So I started in corporate at 19, and I did administrative roles. So I always say I went from clerk typist to CEO, because back in the day, I'm dating myself, we were called clerk typists. And I went from those roles like clerk typist and data entry and moved up to being an executive assistant, so I was close to the people that ran things. And I always had a different view. So as I would ask questions and talk to whoever my boss was at the time, I just didn't listen to what was said. I wanted to operate in what they were doing. You know, I wanted to operate in what the head people were doing. And I went from there. I was still actually living in New Jersey. Then when I moved down to Washington, D.C., was still doing administrative roles, but I fell into this thing called, I call it the proposal world, where I help government contractors, the big boys like Lockheed and Boeing, they still make airplanes. I'm trying to think, you know, even AT&T, I mean, they have government contracting segments, things like that. But I worked with a lot of the big government contractors and helped them win government contracts for spy planes, for defense tools and resources, professional services, which just might mean project management and things like that, and move from there into working for myself, and then from there to owning my own business. I mean, I was working for myself, but I didn't consider myself a CEO at the time, mm-hmm. and then I had to hire people, and it just grew from there. But the one thing I think that ran true was throughout, you know, I think one thing that kept me successful throughout my 25 years was I would walk into anybody's office that asked to ask them the question. I wasn't scared to ask the question, and I always came back and researched more than what they said. So if they told me how a car worked, I wanted to know what the technology of the car, where it was going. That was my thing. And being that I have a creative brain, which helped me create solutions wherever I went, which was one of the reasons I stayed employed, even as working for myself in a corporate realm, you know, that really helped me because I could foresee problems and I could foresee things and have solutions basically in my back pocket. Then I had a colleague who I worked with when I was working on my own while we were working in corporate, and he said, I have this opportunity I think you should look at. And this company wanted to hire me full-time, which I said no for almost 6 months. But they wanted to hire me to create a department, which I did. And that was, you know, I took a few corporate hiatuses, but this one was the longest because the market crashed, so I was there for 8 years. And I never gave up my business. I always was doing something where it was professional development training, whether I was editing manuscripts. I always kept my foot in the entrepreneurial space. And I'm a workaholic by nature, which I call myself a recovering workaholic. But I always owned my stuff. Even when I worked for someone else, I was accountable. I owned my work, my space, everything. And that, to me, for me personally, is what allowed me to be successful and to keep, you know, the life going while I was in corporate, because I really am not a corporate person. But the fact that I could come up with the solutions, I owned my own space, I owned my work, that's how I looked at it. I knew that my work was my reputation. To get to the next level, I just took on ownership before it was talked about. I mean, nobody was talking about it. They just wanted you to do the work. And I just took a different perception of how to work. And that's what's getting me to relaunch after being in business for 20 years.
Wow. That's very – I was very excited. I celebrated my 3 years. So 20 is an awesome goal to get to. So that's amazing. So – here's my question, because you brought up something that's interesting, an interesting question here, and I'm going to kind of flip it on you. You said, you know, I always asked the question and then did further research. And so as an entrepreneur or women who are listening that are entrepreneurs, because let's make the distinction here is, what is the difference between asking the question and trying to get all the information for free from another entrepreneur? And I know you deal, I'm sure you deal with this with leaders, and they go, oh my gosh, I talked to that person for 6 hours and they never became my client, or that, you know.
Right.
So how do you focus leaders to be able to ask the question but not give away everything?
So I'm going to say that there's two things. One is, you have to learn that you are a business owner, or you are, you know, if you're a business owner, you're a leader. You can't be a business owner without being a leader. And if you suck at business, it may mean you're sucking at leading. And I'm not being funny. I'm not being mean. You're just sucking at it, right? So that's number one, is that you have to understand this is business. The second thing is that there are times I struggle with it just because it's my passion to do. But the deal is, for me, it's not that I'm not clear on what not to give away, but I have so much in me. If you come to me with a question or something like that, I may have 100-fold answer for you. But because I give 5% of that, people think, oh, my goodness, I have the answer. And then they, quote, unquote, say, oh, they don't want to be my client, or, you know, not the, you know, they'll say they can't afford me, or not right now, or whatever. But little do they know, I honestly was just giving them a taste. Mm-hmm. It was definitely not the full answer, and it was not the full Monty. And even if I gave them the 30,000-foot answer, the other places I was going to take them that was expansive and wide, they don't really know. They think they do, but they really don't. And I just shake my head like, you'll never get where I was really trying to take you, but okay. So what I had to personally do was ask the question. You know, if somebody says, hey, Denise, I'd love to talk with you, fine. Number one, I would ask the questions and control the conversation. I would let them do most of the talking, but I'm almost interviewing them so that I can get all the information I need to come up with a personal plan to propose to them if they want to do business with me. So I may ask you 6 different questions, and there may be some follow-up questions, but I'm getting the information that I need. Now, if they say, Denise, what should I do about X? I will flip it back around and say, well, tell me what you love most. Tell me what you will do and forget to eat. What, you know, I will turn things back onto them and keep them talking and get everything that I need so that I'm not giving it away. And I'm going to tell you, up until like 2 months ago, I was still probably giving too much away. To me, it wasn't a lot, but to them it was, and they thought that they had the golden goose, and really they just had a golden nugget, and that was it. But they didn't know that. So then I had to really look at myself and say, a lot of times when that happens, we are better than we know that we are, or than we believe than we are, that we are. Because if someone's looking at you and you give them a nugget and you're like, they're like, oh my God, I got it, I don't need them anymore, it's because you almost underestimated how powerful you are. So the women that are listening, and men too, if you are having strategy sessions, or like you said, the 6 hours, because I'm a talker, so I can be on the phone for an hour and a half. You know, it's easy for me. But sometimes you're doing so much talking, they think that they're getting something, even if you didn't get to the meat of it, even if you're actually holding back. And if you're not, and you realize that you've given away too much, you just have to say, oops, you know, to yourself, oops, and shut it down. You have to have a structure. Not a structured 10 questions for everyone, but you have to have questions in your mind that you know you're going to ask, like, you know, what can you do all day without eating, you know, and you'll forget to eat. You have to make sure you are in interview mode and not in solutions mode. If you are not in solutions mode, you're fine. You can be on the phone for 6 hours and be in interview mode and still not give them anything. And I don't suggest you're on the phone for 6 hours, but I, you know, I know it happens. because we're so into it and we're enjoying that they're enjoying us, but you have to stop. You have to stop doing that.
I think that what you say is key there is, and there is a difference between interviewing somebody to be your client or and being in solution mode, because they're coming for solutions. That's their whole end game. And how they get it is totally different.
Right.
Some value in getting it by paying it and some don't. And knowing who you're dealing with by interviewing them, that's very helpful. But let's switch gears a little bit. Because part of what you do, anytime that you're a leader, and I know this even for myself sometimes, and really we still have this great group that and I think we used a little bit less, but we have a place to go and turn to, is that entrepreneurs, we have a tendency to sometimes feel like we are the only person going through this. Everybody else's business is success. You know, whatever those thoughts are that some of us have predetermined, you know, everybody else is getting this easier, or nobody else has a client that pays late, or whatever, or I'm having a hard time getting the systems up and running and everybody else seems to have theirs. Whatever it is, they're really not alone, but I don't know if entrepreneurs feel comfortable enough talking to each other sometimes to find out that they're not alone. So how do you deal with that, or how do you suggest leaders deal with that I'm alone feeling?
So to me, there's two parts to this. One is stop talking to everybody about what you're going through, because, number one, everybody doesn't get it. Everybody doesn't even get why you're an entrepreneur in this economy. So you cannot talk to everyone or you're going to feel alone. Because if you're talking to a bunch of 9-to-5ers all the time, even if they're your friends and family, you're going to get the same stuff. Now, some people will say, you know what, you are that person, and they'll be very encouraging, but everybody will not get it. So you're going to feel alone almost automatically. The second thing that I will say is I don't care what someone looks like they're doing. I don't care what you think they're rolling out. I don't care. Everybody at some point has gone through some level of isolation, some level of second guessing. No entrepreneur that has done great things has gone through their whole entrepreneurial career going up to be the superstar and not second guess at least once or twice, maybe more, could be weekly, what the heck am I doing? So whether it's a hard time, whether your launch didn't work well, whether something flopped, et cetera, we've all been through it. Whether it's, I mean, I've been there. I've been through my sister had a massive stroke 6 years ago that derailed what I was supposed to be doing, had family death, had, you know, different things happen where you were just, you know, I was distracted. So everybody has gone through things. People just don't readily talk about it. And it's not so much that, well, they're stronger than me and all this jazz here. They just don't talk about it. They talk to someone. You just may not hear about it. So never think that you're by yourself, because I can guarantee you, that if you told your story to five other entrepreneurs about whatever you're going through, they, A, could be going through the same thing at the same time. Like right now, I think it's a wave of something that's going on. The past 3 years, a lot of craziness is going on in people's lives that are building. You know, they're building their business. But if you talk to other entrepreneurs, I can guarantee you that they've either experienced it or they're going through it right now. I mean, it's not uncommon. So never think that you're alone in this game, that you're, you know, I don't. And it's funny, you need support, but you don't need a whole bunch of people that are going to be, you know, complaining and moaning about everything, because then you don't have the motivation. But you do need people that you can vet, and it may just be a small group of people. Like I have a group of women, we are great together, and sometimes I need a little 30-second vent session, and I'll get that, and I'll let it go. And you have to learn to let it go. But you're not, you know, you're not in this alone. Everybody smiles for the camera. Everybody puts up their best selfie. Everybody says that they're doing great. I can tell you some of the people that looked like that they were doing great. Actually, I was going to do a teleseminar. I was going to do a telesummit a few years ago called The Truth, because so many of us have been through stuff, and everybody's disillusioned, you know, just because they don't know, like they're not in our inner circle to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But they're disillusioned with the, I was broke and I rolled this out, or all this stuff happened, but I got online and said I was doing great, or, you know, I had a coach I paid $20,000 to that didn't deliver crap, or whatever the case was. And people don't know that they're, you know, they're not the only ones experiencing the struggle. And what happens is we get into our own mind and our own depression, like, we're stupid, we shouldn't have never done this, you know, we're depressed, how could, you know, now you're trying to figure out something else to do instead of staying on the journey, because the people that you've been sharing with, they're not entrepreneurs. They're never going to get your vision, so you can't even get a vet session with them because they don't want to hear it. You know, so sometimes we put ourselves in that alone spot, and know this, people are people. Just because somebody's an entrepreneur does not mean that they're going to be your bestie. You know, and just because they're a woman-owned business does not mean that they're going to want to relate to you. People are still people, and you have to find your people that you'll click with, your people that you'll be able to communicate with, you know, your people that there's a common thread. And I don't think that sometimes we don't do that a lot. We go into a room, and we're like, oh, yay, we're all female entrepreneurs, or we're all entrepreneurs from New Jersey, or we're all entrepreneurs that went to this school, and you think everybody should be friends. That, no, the world is the world, so everybody has their different personality that they connect with, and you have to find that group. And it's not that hard, but you have to find that group, and don't, you know, just don't start off with your crazy story. Just don't.
And, you know, it's so funny because you're talking about this, and it reminds me of Sean calling the people she worked with her tribe. And that's really what you have to find, is your tribe and who that is,
right,
and who that you're comfortable with. And remember, and I think the hardest part of that is that most of us have people there who will generally be there for them. And I think when
right.
you're in the midst of it, they sometimes forget that they're actually there.
Right, and what happens is, because I just, I may have just periscoped about this, but one thing is that who you talk to when you're doing bad is not who you talk to when you're doing good.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're doing bad, sometimes you want to talk to the people that you talk to when you're doing good, and you forget about the people you talk to when you're doing bad, and then the problem is the people that you're with, I mean, that you would normally talk to when you're doing your worst, that's really your support system. But you don't share the good stuff, or you don't talk about the good stuff, or you're not hanging with them during the good days. You're just coming to them during the bad days. So, you know, sometimes we make ourselves alone in that we're picking the wrong people to be our cheerleaders and our support circle, because when we're flying high, we want to fly high with all the other eagles, and we forget that our support foundation should be part of our celebration, and we almost self-isolate ourselves. So then when we're doing horrible, we want those other eagles, we want to call them and get, you know, some motivation or a solution from them, but they're flying. You're walking and they're flying, but you forget that, you know, that group of people that's always there for you. So, you know, we don't have to self-isolate. I mean, that we get stuck in our own mind of self-diagnosing failure, because, again, those people flying high, they may say flying high because they have a one-word self-affirmation, or one-phrase self-affirmation, or their why is their self-affirmation. And when we fall down, we want to call them, but they're not trying to talk to us because they want to continue to fly. They don't want us to weigh them down, and it sounds bad, but it's true. You might find of the eagles that you fly with a few that will be your aces. And some of them, I will say this because somebody told me this, some of them will not feed into the bad energy because they know that you're worth more than that for your own time, but you don't see it because you're so stuck in your quicksand moment where you feel like you're drowning and really you just need to relax, roll out the quicksand, and get up and shake it off and keep going.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that you're so on point with knowing it. Really, it boils down to know who to talk to when, because there are those different people. There are so, and knowing, and then at the end of the day is how fast you're going to get, even when you talk about it, move on to something else, so that you keep
right.
going. Which brings us to, you have something an interesting thought here, and. Want to explore this with you because you sent me a statement and I'm going to just say it and then I'm going to let you explain it, but it's an interesting point. Dreaming of the life you want without doing anything to get you closer can enslave you. And to me, just that line is really powerful because I don't think when most, and I don't know, you know, most entrepreneurs, they're opening it because of their passion. They're there. They want to do this. And then they don't know what they don't know. So they're like, yes, we're going to do this. And whether it's because you get along in your business for so long or you just know, you don't know what you don't know in the beginning of it, but all of a sudden you could be saying, okay, I want my business here and not moving anywhere to get there. So
right.
I'd love to hear your breakdown on that.
So for the new entrepreneurs, the new wannabe entrepreneurs, if you're dreaming and you're networking and you're handing out all your little VistaPrint cards and you're talking about what you're doing, and in the first 3 years, you're hustling. I call them my Kinsey years. Those of you that watch Ruth understands what that means. So my first 3 years of business, when I started in 95, it was yes, ma'am, no, sir. That was my no problem zone. And I gave up a lot of my personal time. But the thing was, I wasn't making all the money I wanted to. I wasn't even making all the money I was worth. But I was sucking in everything that I needed to. So once I hit that, and I really could have done it after 2 years, but I did it 3 years for my own sanity. After the end of that third year, I raised my prices. So the point is that I was doing and I was making money. If you're running around, I'm going to start a business, I'm doing this, I'm looking at that, I'm planning on this, I'm going to do, going to, coulda, shoulda, woulda, if, when, I'm trying, all those phrases, I'm sitting to, I can't even, you know, all of those phrases, and you're not doing anything. I understand if you have to take a break. I mean, when my sister had that stroke, I took a break for like 2 years. I didn't do anything. I couldn't. I didn't have the mental capacity to. I listened to free things. I listened to blog talk. I listened to anything I could get my hands on, even if it was an hour driving in the car because I wanted to keep my foot in the game. If you have to take a break because of something traumatic, I get it. But if you're talking about I'm doing, I'm gonna, and nothing is being produced, I don't care if it is a $20 audio. I don't care if it's a $10 webinar. I don't care. You have to be doing something, or you're just personally enslaving yourself, because the more you talk, you are putting all of this pressure on yourself about what you're not doing. And at some point, the fakeness even gets on your nerves. First, you're excited, and you go from excited to I'm trying to keep up with Wendy and Denise to, oh, my God, I'm not doing anything, but I can't tell anybody. So now you're in shame. Now you're getting depressed. Now you're like, oh, my God, how can I catch up and show that I'm producing anything because my car is falling apart and I'm supposed to be this business owner? You are self-enslaving your own dream, your own life, your own mind, your own passion, simply because you're talking the talk and ain't walking nowhere. you're listening to everybody's telesummit. And don't get me wrong, I did it. You listen to everybody's telesummit. I'm going to do. And wasn't doing anything. And for, you know, and then sometimes we get to that point, we think we're ready, but, oh, my God, do I need this? Do I need something else? Am I sure that I have everything? Trust me, the first time that you think of that first program, that first product, and you can do it, but you're holding yourself up waiting to be complete, waiting to get all of the information, but you're running around here talking about you got a business and haven't produced a thing, self-enslavement. You got a blog, you haven't updated it. I get it. Life happens, things happen. Nobody understands that better than me. I'm telling you, self-enslavement. Now, that's my new entrepreneur, because you can have the website up and look like you're doing something, not doing a thing. Those are all my new entrepreneurs that haven't produced $1. My second set are my experienced folk. Could have been like me. Went back into corporate. You know, I went to corporate not because I had to, because I was making great money. I was just about to hit, like, my three-figure rate and everything. I mean, I was doing great. But I will tell you, God always sets me up. I don't know how he deals with everybody else. I just know for me, he always sets me up. So financially, I've never fallen. I've never taken a hit. I've always recouped what I thought I lost. I was, you know, I never burdened my parents and all that stuff. God has always set me up in the right place at the right time for the right thing. So when I took the corporate, I call it my corporate hiatus, it's really my entrepreneurial hiatus into corporate. But I took my corporate hiatus. I only did it because I never created a permanent department in a corporate arena from scratch. That's the only reason. I mean, I had folks there that were in the group, but I knew I was going to get rid of all of them anyway. But, I mean, I never did that. So I said, hey, I want to get that on my resume, because who knows, I might need it to teach other people, right? That was my thought. And then while I was there, again, God set me up so well, because after a couple of years, I told my sister, I got to get back to working on my business so I can get the heck out of there. I hate the job. And then another 2 years goes by. I haven't really done anything. And really, I realized God set me up there to learn what's going on in corporate now. And he took me through situations and instances that I can then teach people, this is how I did it, and this is how I did it successfully without losing my job. So here I am, entrepreneur. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I didn't say anything. I'm listening.
Okay. So here I am, entrepreneur. I'm doing, like, little small things. You know, I'm editing manuscripts. You know, people ask me to speak at certain things. I did that. So I'm, you know, my company never technically closed. I was doing things, and, you know, without doing the conflict of interest and all of that stuff. So I was doing certain things, and then I was in this corporate environment that was unhealthy. Everybody was being affected, regardless of age, race, or gender. It was all a hot mess. And, you know, I was gaining all of this information, and then everybody was saying I was in coaching programs, 10,000, 20,000, you name it, I was in it. And people were like, Denise, when are you leaving to go do what you are supposed to be doing? And I was going through the, I'm going to trying woulda, coulda, shoulda, if. I was also doing the, I don't want to have people have to know me all over again, meaning I didn't want to have to build up my reputation from scratch, because I was not doing, everybody knew me as the proposal chick because that's what I had done for so long. So now I was switching over to leadership development, and people were like, okay, that's great, but people were still trying to hold on to the proposal chick persona, and I'm like, I'm not doing that when I leave. I'm going to be doing the leadership piece. So, you know, I was having a problem ego-wise of why do I have to rebuild my reputation again? And one of my coaches, I'll never forget, she said, Denise, what is the problem? I said, really? I said, the problem is this. Everybody knows El Denise. So I am having a problem with rebuilding myself all over again so somebody can know El Denise, the leadership person versus the proposal person. And I was just mad that I had to start from scratch in a new area. I had a problem with that. So, again, I was dreaming. I was reading. I was researching. I was getting coached. I had the website up, all that stuff. And I self-enslaved myself out of being stubborn and not doing. I wasted 2 years just not doing. I wasted about 2 years and 50 grand just not doing. I was dreaming it. I was talking about it. I was networking. I was doing a little bit of speaking, but I was not producing the things I should have been producing. I should have been producing all types of programs, which I should have. I didn't do it because I was too busy dreaming and not doing. So those of you that, you know, that read the Bible, understand, you know, faith without works is dead, and faith without works makes you a dead person. You are in a mental, psychological jail cell that then you have to figure out how to bust out of it, because sometimes you get so stuck in, I don't want to, or you've created this persona, you've created this big old life lie that you don't know how to get out of. So that's what I mean by dreaming and not doing, and then you're self-enslaved.
And that has to be one of my favorite quotes, is faith without works is dead. And
yeah.
To me, you, anywhere in your life, that is so true. Whether it's in your personal relationships, your business relationships, there is always a component of it takes a little bit on your part to actually help manifest that. You know, and so I can't even slightly, and it really is one of my favorite Bible quotes, because I really, really, truly believe that. And I think when you keep that in the back of your mind as an entrepreneur, it does give you that extra push to keep going and doing something, as opposed to staying in that stuck mode. Now, does this go straight along as we're talking about, you know, dreaming a life you want without getting closer, is this similar, or is it a little bit different than staying in the if mode is the depth of the future? Because that's another very strong thing to say, because we can if ourselves right out of anything. Well, if only this would happen, and if only this piece would fall apart, and the biggest one I hear when I work with new companies, if only I had the money to pay for the advertising, I'm like, well, that's not, you're kind of selling yourself short there. You know, like, so that's probably one of the biggest things I hear. If only I had the money that I would be able to afford you. And I'm thinking, okay, and I'll work, we could do something else there, but you can, if only yourself right out of clients, right out of, feeling worthy. I mean, there are so many things you can if only.
Yeah, I mean, the if mode is just an excuse not to find a solution, and it kills your future, period. It's a delay. It's a procrastination that, and I am the master logical procrastinator, like, for real. Like, I can come up with any logical anything. I'm very creative. I'm a very good creative writer, and I can come up with the best reason that I did not do something or I'm not doing something. The if mode is just what you said, and it's also, if the kids would act right, if the husband would understand, if I had the money, if I didn't have to pay for this, if I didn't have to go there, if I wasn't a caregiver, if I had whatever. Whatever it is, more time, if I had a website, if I understood social media, if you could if yourself from now till kingdom come. And I'm telling you, it is totally a future killer. I mean, my mother has a story inside her. I want her to speak so bad. I mean, I really do. She has a wonderful story, and I think she can help so many grandparents and so many great-grandparents. And she's not a type A like me, so she's just like, I don't know if I want to do that. And then she's scared that I'm going to be running it, so she knows I'm going to be intense. But, and she's not an intense person, she's like so laid back. Mm-hmm. But she can tell the story, and at one time she really thought about it, and she said, well, she started off with, "It's something." I said, you can't worry about the if. You just got to do it. And she was like, "Well, no, don't I need this stuff together?" I said, "I'll take care of that. I'll take care of the website, everything." I said, "I will book you as many times or the least amount of times you want to be booked." I said, "But you have to have a one-day conference every year. It needs to be like a one-day day retreat or something every single year for these people." And I said, "I guarantee you in 3 years it will be huge." And she said, "When I retire, I'll think about it." And if she said something like, if I think it's a good idea then, or if things work whatever way. And I said, I said, "If you're going to say if, you're never going to do it. You're just never going to do it." I said, "Because you're already putting the obstacle in your way, and it's really not in your way." I said, "We can just book it and get it done." I said, "Trust me, everything will fall into place." And a lot of times that's what we do. We'll just say if. And sometimes we're tired. Sometimes we're scared. Sometimes we don't know if we can pull it off or whether it's going to work, so we just come up with an if. That's the easy acceptable excuse. If my husband would understand, and somebody, then, you know, then somebody else there standing with us, "Oh, I know what you mean, because mine wouldn't go for that either." You know what? If you're a woman and you're married to a man, I'm going to tell you right now, men are never going to sign on anything unless they see concrete numbers and you're bringing in concrete numbers. Because most of the men, especially those that are not in the coaching industry, all they know is, "I work and I bring home a paycheck." So if you're working and you're listening to all this stuff, what are you producing? They like tangible results. So if you're waiting for that, that's never going to happen. You have to have a tangible result. You know, I'm not saying your spouse won't ever support you. They'll support you in the beginning. But if you go like 3-4 months, they're like, "So, when's the money coming in?" But that's everybody's husband. Like, it's not just yours. It's everybody's husband. I tell women this all the time. Create the plan, show them the plan, bring him in on the plan, produce something. I don't care if it's $50, so that he knows that it's worth something. I said, or he's not going to support you. But if you're going to say, "If my husband would," I'm like, that's an excuse. There's a solution for that. There's a solution for every if that you have. There's at least one solution, sometimes two, for every if that you can give me.
And you're so, that's so funny, because God love my husband. I'm going to tell you a quick story. So I had a business partnership at one time, and I ended up coming out on my own. And he said, I don't know, for first year, it was, and this is when Sean was coaching me, and it was hysterical, because he's like, I don't know. Now he is so grateful I have my own business.
Right.
But that's what had to happen. Like, and I could not then get into his fear of
right.
what could happen. What right. I did was, I hear you, I love you, I'm going to do this anyway. And
right.
it's not always easy to take that road when you have somebody who wants to be supportive but wants to see the tangible results. But we have
exactly.
a much better relationship, especially surrounding my business today, because he not only knows that I'm doing it and I'm, you know, practicing what I'm preaching, is that I don't allow anybody to tell me, "Well, no, you can't," and then me use that as
right.
an excuse. So it's a really powerful testament to what you just said, is that sometimes you just have to move out of the fear of if and say, "Well, this is what we're going to do anyway. And I know that that's
right.
not
I mean,
always an easy thing to do. It's not comfortable.
Right. I mean,
on this side
exactly. Right, that's what I was going to say, is that we have to get unstuck from our comfortable, like, we rest on that if like it is a pillow, you know, on the sofa, and we're like, "Oh, I got this if right here to lean on, so, you know, I can still be comfortable." No, you need to remove that, because just like, you know, your solution was, you did it. That was your solution. I mean, I could name 10 other solutions that you know, that got you to do it. But your ultimate solution was, "I needed to move out. That was the problem." You know, that was your observation. And you did it. So that was the solution, because you could have said, "Well, if my husband says no, I guess I'm not going to do it." But the solution was, you did it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, Now he's so happy. Not only is he happy, he brags about you. He probably halfway finds you clients. That's
yes.
what people will do. But mm-hmm. you have to solve that if factor. And if you can solve that if factor, you will be surprised. I mean, I dated somebody while I was paying all that money with coaching, and he, you know, forked over like $3,000, it was like $3,700 for my video training, because I was like, I need to get comfortable doing video, because that was part of my stage fright, you know, how do I look and stuff like that. And once I got past that, oh, it was great. And then Periscope came into play, and I was scoping, looking crazy. But I was like, yay, this is cool. You know, people are listening to me, no matter if I look like Don King or not. You know, I have natural hair, so I have an afro. And sometimes my hair looked crazy, and I was like, I just, you know, I said I was going to scope at a certain time, and I did it. And, you know, I got over all of that. I mean, I did. And I know some people would never be on camera without makeup. I get that, and I understand that, and I respect that. For me, I don't wear makeup all the time anyway, so, you know. But, you know, if I said, oh, I can't go out on that, you know, I can only do video if I have makeup on, if my hair is perfect, if I have on my company colors. And for a while, I tried to do that. Even when I cook, I'm like, oh, gosh, what am I going to throw on? I wore that yesterday. And, you know, I may have only worn it for like a minute, but I'm like, oh, okay, I can't put that back on. And I was getting caught up in a whole bunch of stuff, and I just needed to do it. And once I did it, things were great.
And that's the thing. I think it's just it's all about that first step, just getting through that first step of it and saying, okay,
right,
this is the next step. And then once you do that, you say, oh, I can do that, and now I can take the next step. You know,
right. And even with the steps, Wendy, we're so worried about the freaking staircase instead of understanding there's steps and a landing. This is the first step to this situation. You may have a lot of first steps. Okay. There may only be 3 steps to each situation, but we look at it like 20 steps, and it's not 20 steps. It's the first step to your website, the first step to your social media, the first step to your bio. It's every, you know, there's first steps. And I think people get overwhelmed by the 20 steps. It's not 20 steps, it's first.
Yeah. And then once you take it, you have it done. And then you can say.
Exactly.
And then you can say to somebody else who's going through that, I got through this. You know, and I think that's the most important part, is that there is a sense of, once you go through something, and you do have that person who's like, I don't know if I can do this, and you can say, like, this
right.
is my experience. My experience has shown me, because it's really hard to talk from anything else. Like, I hear you talking about your experience and how you say, when you were stuck, walking through that and saying, okay, it took me this long, but once I got here, I got here. So there's
right.
nothing more important than hearing and saying, okay, let me look at their experience and know that once I get there, there is another side to it. So I want to spend the last few minutes, and we only have I'm trying to keep track here. We only have a few minutes, but I do want to talk to you about this idea, because I know as an entrepreneur myself, and it's so funny because I put on Facebook, I'm going to have a child-free and husband-free night, and I'm like, I need a really good idea to, like, go do something for myself. But, and I think as an entrepreneur, we forget to take care of ourselves in the interim. So
okay.
What would you, you know, what is that idea of being able to take care of yourself?
Wow. So the biggest thing is when you know that you need to take care of yourself, maybe you're feeling burnout or you're not able to think and be creative and do things in the optimal level, that's when you know that you need to take a break. And you should never wait till it gets that far, but that's the first time you're like, hey, I really need a break. You need to be totally selfish in your decision of what you're going to do. It's not time to think about, well, maybe we should have a family night. No, because then you're still doing. You need to think about the thing that you love to do the most, the thing that you should be doing that you used to do and maybe you stopped doing. Like, for me at one time it was crocheting. Like, I used to crochet all the time. It was very relaxing, and I could crochet and watch TV and just zone out, and I hadn't done that in a while. My other ultimate is, of course, getting a massage. That helps me during my most stressful time. And, you know, it's looking at that thing that's all about you. Being all about you and being selfish and being, what's the word, just self-absorbed, it's not a bad thing. People look at selfishness as being a bad thing. It's not a bad thing, because if you are not selfish, you're not going to get things done the way you need to get them done. The other thing is, set time out every day. It could be 20 minutes. 20 minutes for you to take a walk in the middle of the day, 20 minutes for you to get quiet. If you are still working and you're running your business, guess what? 20 minutes in the stairwell, if that's what you need, 20 minutes without anybody around is what you need to get recentered and make sure that you are working in your optimal self. If you're sick, you may not be at optimal physical performance level, but you need to be your optimal self. And in order to do that, you definitely need some selfish time. You work hard. If you're a woman and you have a family, you work hard to give everybody else their time. If you're the glue to everybody, you make sure everybody has their time, but you have to have your selfish time as well.
I totally agree with you, and I think that's a key thing, because we go and go, and sometimes as entrepreneurs, and we forget that if we don't keep ourselves sane and balanced, then we are going to have difficulties, to say the least, being able to keep up that pace and being able to keep going. And so I think timeouts, especially during the workday, is key. And then there's one other thing, and we're going to talk about for two minutes, is you talk about being totally selfish and focusing on you, but in a way to be able to celebrate yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sometimes, and I'm going to say this, because it's where I just came out of. The past, you know, like I said, this has been a weird past couple of years for people. Last year, when we lost Sean, I lost another friend 17 days before her. And he was murdered. It was, of course, totally unexpected. And I went to this funeral, and I was just coming out of that when I was getting the, you know, we were getting the Facebook things and all that about Sean. And for a year and a half for me, well, it's been more than a year and a half now, but from last year to this year, I have been going through more family deaths. I just had like two funerals on one day, things like that, where number one, I knew that I needed to get away, but number two, I knew that I needed to self-motivate me and replenish me. But I'm going to tell you, this summer, I've really been able to look back over my life. I'm in a place of being poured into. I'm normally the glue. I pour into everybody else, and I keep everybody else going and all of that. But I'm in a place where people are pouring into me, and I'm letting them really talk to me, and I'm shutting my mouth, and I'm letting them talk what needs, you know, they're talking to me, and they're saying what needs to be said about me, what they think of me, how strong I am, the value I bring, blah, 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 blah. And it's not all egotistical stuff. It's really about me as a person and my character. So with that, as I've been able to be quiet, I began to look back at things that I've done. And when I look back at things that I've done, forget the corporate awards I didn't get, forget the ones that I did get, forget the money that I made for other people, but the things I did for my life and my own personal accomplishments, and that's why I'm like, wow, there's a whole lot about me that I'm not celebrating, that I'm not talking about, and that I'm not sharing, because I discounted it, and really, I'm a pretty awesome person. But because we get stuck, and I got stuck in being the glue, and that's where the whole getting unstuck comes from. I was writing a book about being the glue, to everyone else. And I said something on Periscope one day, and I said something about being unstuck, and then somebody asked a question, and I answered it, and there was another question, and I answered it, and then we were having, like, this unofficial get unstuck party, and then it just went out of control from there. But when you're the glue like that, you are so not paying attention to everything that you've done. And one of the things that kind of spearheaded it was my nephew sent me this birthday greeting that just blew me out the water, and I was like, oh, my God. And that's when I knew I needed to celebrate me more.
I so agree with you, and I think that it's so important. And when you go through tragedy, sometimes you realize that more, and hopefully my listeners understand that you don't have to. You can just learn how to celebrate you. I think one of the hardest things that I see happen is somebody compliments and they want to react as opposed to celebrating yourself and saying thank you. And I think listening is the key to being able to say thank you and just accept yourself. We are so about out of time. I am so happy you came on the show today. It's been fabulous. I'm really excited that the show is back, but I'm really happy that you are my relaunched guest. So this has just been phenomenal to sit and
thank
talk
you.
To you. We are going to listen to all of your information, and so that if you want to contact Elle Denise and find out about what else she does, we're going to have a commercial for her in just one second. But I do want to say that we have Christy Smallwood from Arkham Executives coming on next week. We're just as excited to have her on the show, and she will be talking about networking and how to build relationship networking. She's my networking expert, and so I'm really excited to have her back on the show. She was on earlier in the year, and she's coming back for round two. So, Denise, thank you again, and we will talk soon, you and I, and we're going to end the show and have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Have you ever been in a situation where you feel stuck or suffocated? Ever feel like so many things are holding you down or overwhelming you to the point that you are mentally paralyzed? If you're a busy professional or business owner and you're constantly juggling life, work, and everything in between, while neglecting yourself and not living the life you've dreamed of, then come listen to America's leadership solutionist, Elle Denise Jackson, as she talks about getting unstuck and how it can rock. She will help you get unstuck and live life to the fullest. She can help you with being totally selfish and focusing on you, living your dream life today, removing you from the if mode. This accomplished entrepreneur and successful former corporate manager knows exactly how you feel trying to balance it all and will show you how to stop feeling stuck every day. Call her at 202-695-3221.